The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome music guest Waylon. I also cover the top movies, the NBA Finals wrap-up, Nick Wallenda's Wire Act, the Supermoon, world records, all this and more happening now on Revelator.
And enjoy the show.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome to another edition of Revelator. I'm your host Ryan. Hopefully you're doing all right out there. I've got a kick-ass show for you tonight, man. There's no lie about that. Really kick-ass band from Michigan, Waylon will be coming on, so definitely stick around for that. But I tell you what, you know, this past weekend was the Supermoon. I don't know if anybody had a chance to check it out. I did. And it was really cool. It was kind of hard to miss. Now, the Supermoon is what coincides with what astronomers call the lunar perigon. It is a point in which the moon is closest to the Earth in its elliptical orbit around the planet. Basically, it means the moon was really, really huge and big is really what that means there. It was really cool. I mean, all kinds of really cool photos on Twitter and social networks and Huffington Post. Everybody taking really awesome pictures of the moon in these, you know, various situations. And definitely the Wolfman was out this weekend. There's no doubt about it. So hopefully you had a chance to partake. If not, I'm sure you can go on numerous different sites and check out some of the really cool pictures. The New York City skyline out in L.A., in Greece, you know, London, all kinds of really cool pictures of the moon in these really great city landscapes. It's really cool to see. But also this weekend, Nick Wallenda. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with Nick Wallenda, he is part of the Nick Wallenda, the Flying Wallenda circus family for tightrope walking, death-defying feats, if you would. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers, about a year or so ago, he did the he crossed Niagara Falls on a wire. Now, this past Sunday on, I believe it's Discovery Channel, on a 2-inch thick steel cable, 1,500 feet above the Navajo Nation near the Grand Canyon, it took him 22 minutes to cross, pausing and crouching as the wind whips around up to 30 miles an hour. The 34-year-old from Sarasota, Florida, is the seventh generation high wire artist from, again, the famous Flying Wallenda circus family. Now, you want to talk about death-defying acts. His grandfather, Carl Wallenda, fell during a performance in Puerto Rico at the age of 73. Several other family members, including a cousin and uncle, who have also perished while performing higher wire stunts. Well, I guess, you know, it's kind of like being like a crocodile hunter or something. I mean, eventually, at some point, you're probably going to have a slip up. And obviously, you never wish those things. But if you're a seventh generation tightrope walker and you're walking over the Grand Canyon and Niagara Falls and doing all these death-defying feats, time is ticking. It's just a matter of time, unfortunately. I don't wish that, obviously. I mean, a lot of people have been asking, oh, is it a sport? And, you know, I don't want to get caught up in that, but this guy's out there in like a pair of like denim jeans and a t-shirt. He's like, yeah, I'm just going to grab this bar, walk across this Grand Canyon here on a Sunday evening. How are you doing? You know, are you having pork chops for dinner? I'm walking across the Grand Canyon on a wire. Unbelievable. 1,500 feet in the air, no harness, no anything. So, I mean, one slip up, 30 mile an hour winds, boom, that's it. With his family there, his wife, his kids, standing at the other end of this wire. Unbelievable. Nick Wallenda, whether you think it's, a, you know, he's athletic or not, you know, or sport, you know, all the ESPN, all these, you know, Fox Sports, all these people talking about, oh, is it a sport? Is it a sport? Well, look, it's definitely something you can get into. It's death-defying. I mean, there's no greater risk that you're taking than walking 1,500 feet in the air on a 2-inch thick steel cable with no attachments or harnesses while your friends and family are watching whether or not you're going to fall to your death. Sport or not, I don't know. I'll leave that up to you to debate. It's definitely entertaining television. Speaking of things that are entertaining, I came across this afternoon, and I had to talk about it. This is the Air Sex Championships. Yes, I said the Air Sex Championships. The finest day of dry humpers you could possibly imagine, and oral sex aficionados took the stage in New York City, hosted by comedian Chris True. The competition started actually as a spoof on the Air Guitar Championships that take place in Chicago. A one-time parody has now turned into a 14-city tour, culminating in the final world competition in this past December. Men and women separately take the stage, performing their best solo acts to a crowded house of drooling onlookers, while the trio of female judges critique the show based on comedic appeal, sexual performance, range, and sexual energy. Now, they said that obviously this year is a much smaller turnout, but the champion, I love the name of the champion, by the way, is Jam Out With Your Clam Out, who donned a Jam Out With Your Clam Out, well, that's classic, who deemed a geisha-inspired floor-length robe, granny glasses, and a full head of hair with curlers and a strap-on a rubber breast for the finishing touch. Now, her performance, Jam Out, did an imaginary stunt where she had sex with her husband and through her sexual palace relieved him from his death by having sex with him. Now, I mean, this is like dry humping Grammys. I don't know, dry humping Olympics, basically. Now, I'm not surprised Jam Out With Your Clam Out won. I'm really not. I mean, if you're going to make clam, you better make that clam into chowder, right? Num, 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 num. So the Air Sex Championships, enduring their fourth year of success. I have nothing more to add there. Maybe we should start trying to book some of the Air Sex Championship guests. If we can get Clam Out, Rock Out, Jam Out With Your Clam Out on the show to do a little audio for us, I think that would be pretty entertaining. So, Mike, what do you think, man?
Sorry, man. You render me speechless on that one.
You eating clam chowder right now, man? No.
Yum,
but,
yum.
Speaking of really bizarre stories, yeah, you know, everybody's Kool-Aid. It's summertime. It's officially summer, right? Kool-Aid is, obviously a pretty common drink for kids, especially in the summertime. You know, grape Kool-Aid, cherry Kool-Aid. I don't know what your favorite Kool-Aid is, but this guy, Brandon Anthony from Coca-Cola, Florida, took it a little too serious. When his father was offering him tips on how to make Kool-Aid, he got so mad at his 48-year-old father, he actually punched him in the face while trying to make Kool-Aid. Now, I'm sorry, but I mean, are you taking your Kool-Aid that serious that you're going to punch your own father? Hey, I know Father's Day was just a week ago. Don't you dare tell me how to make my grape Kool-Aid, okay? Just don't do it.
Hey, Kool-Aid!
Oh, yeah. Kool-Aid here, bringing you fun. Kool-Aid got thirst on the run. Get a big, wide, happy ear to wear Kool-Aid smile.
Tastes great. Our friend's cool.
Our friend's Kool-Aid.
Kool-Aid brown soft drink mix.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I punched my dad in the face making Kool-Aid. Now, speaking of, we talked about world records at the top of the show, and this is a really cool world record I thought I would share. This is a world record for setting a record for 39 donuts in 100 seconds. Check this out.
International stunt driver. I'm down here today to help promote the Vospers 100 used car sale. We used that twist of 100, so I tried to set the record for the most donuts achieved in 100 seconds. So I used this fantastic little stunt car behind me. It's a racing car from America, 1937 Ford sedan is the body shape. It's 5/8 scale. It has a 1200cc motorcycle engine in it, and we just done 39 donuts in 100 seconds for a new world record.
How about that, man? Now, that is a hot rod right there. 39 donuts in 100 seconds. That's kind of what my first driving test was like. Also setting a world record is Andrew WK, best known for his partying during the O Music Awards, a 24-hour live music day, which kicked off this past Wednesday. Andrew WK spent the entire time attempting to break the new world record by continuously drumming for 24 hours. And he actually successfully completed it. He said, it's sort of like dangling a carrot in front of a greyhound doggy. You keep chasing the carrot, and maybe I put a hot piece of pizza in arm's reach with a whiff in the odor of aroma, and it tantalizes in a sweet, rich reward. I had pizza, and I partied afterwards. Congratulations to him for setting a record for 24 hours of straight drumming. I can imagine the excruciating pain that would take to drum for 24 hours. And he was joined with all kinds of other drummers. Chad Smith from the Chili Peppers, Questlove from The Roots, and a myriad of other musicians joined him behind drum kits and played along with him for that 24 hours. Really cool event. And he accomplished his world record in the 24-hour drumathon, now holding the Guinness World Record for drumming 24 hours straight. Maynard James Keenan of Tool is actually donating several items to families and actually a rec center that was hit by the Oklahoma tornado. Obviously, Maynard James Keenan of Tool, Perfect Circle, and Pussifer has reached out to help the state's Animal Resource Center. The center was damaged by the tornadoes and to raise money to for the Animal Resource Center recovery. Keenan is auctioning off platinum plaques he received from Tool's Undertow and also Perfect Circle's debut album. And basically, you know, if you're interested in finding more about that or in obviously bidding on them in auction, you can go to believer.com. They're being auctioned off actually right now. So you can go to believer.com if you would like to bid on those two plaques, which will also obviously benefit the Animal Resource Center there in Oklahoma, which is also affected by the tornadoes. And Kanye West, you know, we don't talk a lot of Kanye West, and you know, but this comment kind of irks me a little bit. You know, we always you know, we have great guests on. We have a great guest on Waylon coming on, great band from Michigan coming on. But you know, we're always you know interested in finding people who are humbled and interested in spending their time. And you hear quotes from these guys who are in the industry, and it just makes you it really pisses me off, honestly. He wrote, "I am a god," because it's like, yo, man, hey, I'm Kanye West, man. Hey, you know, he said, he's like, I'm the real rock star. I'm the biggest one man living rock star on the planet. He said, comparing himself to Guns N' Roses, the late Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix. Him classifying himself on those three individuals, Axl Rose, Jim Morrison, and Jimi Hendrix, makes me want to vomit. He said, I made this song because I'm a god, he said with laughter. Ha, yeah. He says, this rap shit is music. He's like, I am God. Now what? 36-year-old rapper showed that he's self-aware of this comment as well. He said, laughing again, if I use the word wrong or not, it doesn't matter. He's like, just basically he's just telling people, you know, he's like, my ego is my drug. My drug is that I'm better than all you motherfuckers. Kiss my ass. His quotes. I'm better than all of you. I'm a God. Talk about somebody who needs to take a couple steps down, right? I'm a god. I'm better than all of you. That's what this guy thinks. Here, why don't you go buy more of his albums and buy more of his garbage that he's putting out there for you? And that's because he obviously doesn't care, you know? But people eat it up. It's unbelievable. And yeah, so that's Kanye West for you in a nutshell right there. Now, this past week, we lost James Gandolfini, who won 3 Emmy Awards for his portrayal as Tony Soprano in the angst-whacked mob boss who visited a therapist and took Prozac while knocking off people. The Sopranos aired from 1999 to 2007 on HBO Network. James Gandolfini was also, obviously, again, best known as, you know, Tony Soprano. He died this past Wednesday at his on vacation in Italy at the age of 51. His son, who just graduated eighth grade, was actually present with him and actually had to watch paramedics try to revive him. Obviously, that was not the case. So thoughts go out to the Gandolfini family and, you know, really great actor and more than just Sopranos. He did a lot of films as well. So James Gandolfini, you know, dead at the age of 51, very young to pass away. Let's take a look at the top movies this weekend at the box office, starting with number 10, working our way up to number 1. Iron Man, $2.2 million. Star Trek Into Darkness at $3.17 million. The Internship at $3.4 million. The movie The Purge at $3.5 million. Fast and Furious 6, $4.9 million. Now You See Me at $7.8 million. This Is the End at $13.2 million. The Man of Steel, $41.2 million. World War Z, who last week's guest, the lovely Jennifer Vaughn, gave it 4 bunnies at $66 million in its opening weekend. And Monsters University, also in its opening weekend, at $82.4 million. Those are your top movies at the box office. Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, coming to the Revelator Show at this time, hailing from the state of Michigan, it is Mitch, the lead singer from Waylon.
Hello, hello, hello. I feel like a Revelator already.
What's going on, man? Hey, thanks for taking the time out, man. How you been?
Oh, my gosh. I'm fantastic, and it's a pleasure to be a part of the show. You guys sound great tonight.
Ah, well, appreciate that, man. We covered a lot of stuff here, and I appreciate you sitting tight for our opening bits and stuff. Now, I got to ask, man, the band name Waylon, now, you guys had moved to L.A., and, you know, started in Michigan, moved to LA, and then went from LA back to your home state. Now, Wayland, I believe, is the town that you guys grew up in. Is that right?
Actually, it's the town that Phil grew up in. Phil is the guitar player in the band, and we named the band after his hometown. Tyler, the drummer, he grew up very close to Wayland in a town called Middleville. But Tyler and Phil were the only ones from that area. Dean grew up in Detroit. I grew up in Southern Indiana. And to be quite truthful, all four of us met out in Los Angeles. So we met and we formed a band out there. And then when we were releasing, the EP, which was, 2.5 years ago, when we were getting ready to release that, we decided to relocate to Michigan, actually. We named it after Phil's hometown. We wanted to be a blue collar working rock and roll band. Our parents were blue collar workers, and we wanted to be a blue collar working band, and we couldn't do that playing once a month in Los Angeles at whatever club. You know, we had a good fan base in LA, and LA was really good to us. But we had to make the jump to the road, essentially. And what it was a thing, well, do we want to be based out of Los Angeles? Or do we want to be based out of the Midwest, where we're all from? And also, everything aside, LA is kind of an island. And it's so hard to route out to LA. There's not a whole lot in between Arizona and Los Angeles. And there's a lot of land to cover. Whereas if we're centrally based here in the Midwest, we can tour our asses off all the time. And not have to worry about making that big long drive back home. You know, like there's a lot of times that we're within 3 or 4 hours of our home, which is great.
Well, you know what? We've had a lot of bands on from the Midwest. I mean, the guys from Taproot, Three Pill Morning, New Medicine. A lot of those guys, pretty much the same area we are in the Midwest. Touring and kind of making their way there. And that seems to be kind of the way it is now. If you want to be successful, you got to go out there and kind of roll in the dirt and go do it. And some bands are willing to do that, and some are not. And it seems like the bands that we've come across, the ones who are willing to do that, are the ones who are, building a fan base and really being successful at doing so. Now, obviously, with the road comes a lot of ups and downs, I would assume. So, I mean, obviously you're playing a lot of these places, and some of you mentioned you grew up in Indiana, in the Michigan area. When you're traveling to these places, you guys get a chance to, take in the area or the town that you're in. Say you're playing in Cleveland, or, say you're in Cincinnati or somewhere in Kentucky or something, do you guys get a chance to kind of take in the area a little bit, even though, it's, play a show, pack up, unload, head to the next show? Do you guys get a chance to kind of take in the scenery?
You always get a feel for a city. We're really lucky in the sense that, we always have, most of the time, we always have, a couple hours in between load in and showtime or whatever, to take a walk around. And sometimes you're in an area that is flourished and it's a cool place to be. And so you get a feel for that town. And other times you're not in an area where, things are within walking distance and it's not really worth venturing out. But, you always get a feel. You don't always get to, immerse yourself in the city. There are times, I've had a lot of time in Chicago. I've had a lot of time in Orlando and, places close to Miami and upstate New York. And there's countless other places that we've had. You have a day off. You have a day off in Chicago, and you really get a feel for it. You really get a feel for the city. But, we've been to Kansas City like 3 or 4 times, and we've got a great fan base in Kansas City, and the people are amazing. And we every time we're there, I swear, we have to leave right after the show. And that comes to my mind. Kansas City comes to my mind first because that's a place that I get a feel for, and I want to be a part of the city. I want to be, in it for 2 or 3 days and experience the nightlife and experience the coffee shops and check out the museums and all the cool places, because it's such a cool place. So, it just kind of depends on where we have to go next and if we're able to, explore. But I can't complain about that. Having to leave Kansas City because we have other places to be is actually a really great blessing for Wayland and for me, you know. But so I don't know if that answered your question or not.
No, I think it does, man. I mean, obviously, kind of, it's good. I think it's always good to kind of take a step back and kind of reflect on, man, we know we're in Kansas City and we're going to be in, you know, X city tomorrow, and, you know, take a step back and kind of, you know, if time permits, and kind of reflect on, like, man, this is where this is, you know, kind of taking it in and really enjoying what you're doing, which is what it's all about. Now, you guys are playing a bunch of shows in the Midwest, actually starting, you guys are hitting the road. Is that what, tomorrow, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, to be honest, we haven't really been off the road too much. You know, we had 2 days off this week, and one of the cool things about festival season is there's not a lot of full Monday or Tuesday nights. So you're having some time off. If we're close to home, if we're within 3 or 4 hours of home, we're going to come home. But you know, we played 332 shows last year, and we took 5 days off for Christmas, and we started again this year, January 3rd. So we've been home a couple times, but it's always for like a day or two. We are always on tour, and if we're not on tour, we're home for a couple days and we're working on the equipment, or so there's not a whole lot of time off per se. But yeah, we had the Kalamazoo, which is actually really close to us. We had the Kalamazoo tomorrow, and then we're back out again this weekend. And, you know, I don't know when we're coming home after that. We'll just kind of see. It'll kind of depend on the schedule.
Right on. Well, you know, obviously being on the road, I'm sure you see all kinds of strange things, you know, from traveling from one place to the other, you know. What's the strangest thing you guys have seen, or you personally have seen on the road from traveling from one place to another? You know, either be stopping at a taco shop to get some food in the middle of the night, or, you know, whatever. What's the strangest thing you've come across?
You know, I mean, truck stops in general, bless their hearts. Truckers are another breed of people, and they're road dogs all in themselves. But like those truck stops late at night, they can get really crazy. There's these things that I never really knew that they existed, or even believed that they existed, but lot lizards are real. Lot lizards are real, alive, and thriving. And when they come up and they offer you a blowjob for $20, you know that lot lizards are alive and well in the world today. And they're out there making sure that the truckers get from point A to point B with a smile on their face, and you got to appreciate that. But you know, more than strange things, I am really impressed with how amazing our fans are, and to see that grow over the last, you know, 2 years, year and a half is really incredible. And I would say that it's amazing to see, and the links that people will go to drive to come and see you, to bring you food, to house you, to tattoo Wayland on their bodies. And, you know, like to watch that, to see 1,000 people singing a song that you wrote because they love it. In some way, that music touched their soul, just like the music that I love and still love touches mine. And when I go to a concert, I sing as loud as I can. To see that happen from the stage is so humbling and so cool. And so, honestly, more than weird, I just see impressive shit. I see amazing things. I see guys that bong 3 beers at a time, and, you know, like, you know what I mean? They'll be like, I bet you can't do this. And if their favorite band is there and they get dared to do something, they will do it. They will do it right there no matter what it is. So, like, you see, more than weird, I would say amazing beats by our fans and by our friends down the road, and there's never a dull moment. And you know, the road is hard, but I'll tell you guys right now, we keep on doing it because we love it. And if we're home for more than 2 or 3 days, we do get antsy. So you know, it's just it's in our blood.
Well, it sounds like you guys are definitely living it up now. I mean, you mentioned the road was hard. I mean, as a band, you know, traveling, you mentioned Phil, unable to join us tonight, but is there anybody in the band that's kind of a jokester, kind of keeps the mood light when you guys are traveling and driving from one place to another? Who's the prankster in the band, man?
Dean Pizzazz is one of the funniest people, if not the funniest people I've ever met. And he's always down to be the butt of a joke. He's always down to start a joke and to play a trick. And he's known by our fans as kind of the jester. I wouldn't call him a clown because he's too amazing of a person to call him a clown. But as a jester, I think that's a perfect word, you know? He's that guy. I'll tell you a secret about Waylon. Our parties are the most incredible parties that you'll ever go to. And we're fucking poor. But I'll tell you what, you come to our parties, they are the greatest. It's like people cutting loose and living it up and really finding, an incredible level of happiness. There's a lot of positive vibes at our party. Just when you think the party can't get any better, Dean Pizzazz comes down the stairs and does something to the room that charges it with electricity, and the place just erupts. And in the morning, when everyone is a little bit groggy and we're having coffee, everyone says, wow, one of the most amazing parties. But it was when Dean Pizzazz did this and that, that it really took off into outer space. I've lived with him for 13 years now. He's a soul brother of mine, and there's never, if you're around him for more than 10 minutes, you're gonna laugh your ass off, guaranteed.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like a really cool dude, man. Is there one thing you could point out at one of these parties that you can pinpoint where he did something and that still stands out?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I can think of a couple of things. And I'll throw a couple things out there. Maybe our fans that are listening will ask him to do this. Ask him to do Astorpiece Theater. It's amazing. Astorpiece Theater is one of my favorites. And then he used to do this character at our parties called Gladiator 2000. And what he would do is he had this gladiator chest plate and a helmet and a sword. And he'd put the chest plate on with no shirt on. He'd put the helmet on and he'd have his sword and he'd come down with like a sock over his dick. And so he would come down butt ass naked except for this sock. And he was Gladiator 2000. He would go around in the party and like take pictures and pour like liquor down people's throats and dance. And it was a big deal. It was like, and he would tell people, he would be like, Gladiator 2000 is coming. One thing that Dean does, he does an incredible impression of Mick Jagger. An incredible impression. Like he embodies Mick Jagger during this. And so one time we do this big party and we started the rumor really early. We said, hey guys, you know, don't tell a lot of people, but Mick Jagger is coming on later. We got the word and, you know, through a couple of friends, he's stopping by, to hang out with us because we're in with his cousin, or we made up some stupid bullshit thing or whatever. And so it spread like wildfire through this party that Mick Jagger was coming. And people would come up to me and they'd be like, is Mick Jagger really coming over? I'd be like, listen, you know, I don't want to say a whole lot, you know, and I, you know, keep it under wraps, but he's going to be here later. And, we would say something like, ladies and gentlemen, Mick Jagger. And we'd throw on Rolling Stones, Start Me Up. And Dean comes out and does this impression and it lights the room on fire. It lights the room up. Like people are going nuts and he's sweating and doing it and just like throwing his balls out there for everybody. I'm telling you, it lights the party on fire. I'm not joking. It's really incredible. So anyone out there listening, first of all, ask him to do his Mick Jagger impression, ask to see pictures of Gladiator 2000, or buy him a Gladiator costume and he'll do it for you. And then ask him about Astorpiece Theater, because if you're having a bad day, Astorpiece Theater will take it from 0 to 10 easy.
Right on, man. Well, hey, I tell you what, man, let's take a quick break. The first song we've got from you guys tonight is called Nobody's Perfect, which is off the EP, Welcome to My Head. We're going to hear a couple tracks off that EP tonight. This is the second single you guys released. What can you tell me about this track before we get it on tonight, man?
We recorded that out in LA. We wrote that with Jude Cole and Michael Gurley. It was produced by Jude Cole. And we just wanted to write a really cool rock and roll song. And it's about that girl that you meet that you just don't believe that it's real. I mean, she's got to have a big giant dick in her pants. There's no way she's this cool, you know? And, so it's about meeting that girl and being blown away, and you guys are hitting it off, and you say after that date, you know, like, this just can't be true. And that's what the song is about. That's what the catch line is. Nobody's, you know, what is it? Let me know what it is.
Right on. Very cool. I'll tell you what, this is Nobody's Perfect by Waylon here on Revelator. Here on Revelator, that is Nobody's Perfect, hanging out with Mitch from the band, lead singer. Really good stuff, man. Really good vocal work. Obviously, that's the second single off the EP, Welcome to My Head. And we're going to hear more from that EP. But I want to talk to you about, you know, you mentioned you recorded this this EP a couple years ago. You know, pretty good success, touring a lot. Obviously, you mentioned off the air, you guys are going to be working on new material, been working on new material. And this fall, you guys are heading back to LA to do some recording. How excited are you guys to get back in the studio and start writing music again?
Well, You know, we just a couple weeks ago we got back from LA. We had just finished recording the new single that's going to be released on the radio in a couple weeks. It's called Reno. We just got out of the studio and kind of got a little bit of a fix in then, but our producer Mike Gurley came out at the beginning of June, and we took all of the weekdays off of touring, and we just did weekend dates in June. And the rest of the time we spent at a lake house. We had a lake house in Michigan that we used, and a lake house in Illinois just outside of Chicago that we were using. And we just sat down and went through all of our ideas and started writing like crazy. And we ended up, we had like 20 or 30 songs to sift through. And wow. I gotta say, what we came out of those sessions, those writing sessions with, I've never been more proud. As a songwriter, I've never been more proud, because Phil and I have been writing for a really long time, and Phil and Mike and myself have been writing for a long time as well, as a writing team, writing these songs. And, the three of us wrote our first album together, and Mike was a co-writer as well as Jude Cole on, Welcome to My Head record. So the three of us know each other really well as writers, and this is something that we really love to do. Well, the stuff that we just came up with, I gotta say, by far, hands down, is the best material we've ever written. It's definitely the best material I've ever been a part of. And to say I'm excited to go in and record it so that we can share it with everyone is an absolute understatement. And I just cannot wait to get out there in September and record these songs. And it's going to be a lot of fun. We've got a great crew that's working with us. Mike Gurley is going to be producing. Florian Amon is going to be engineering the record. And it's a wonderful process. I always call the songs that I write my babies. And more than releasing them on radio, when we play the new songs live, that's like sending your child off to school. You know, you watch them through adolescence, you watch them through the toddler years, they puke on you, they're pissing all over you. You know, you're trying to work the songs out and get them to where they have good manners. And then you send them out on stage, and it's kind of an animal all of its own. You have to harness them again and rework them. And really, we wanted those songs, those new songs, to smell like rock and roll going into the studio. Jesse James Dupree, our manager, he said, you know, before you go in to record, I want these things smell like fucking rock and roll. I want them smell like juices from the road. That's what I want them feeling like. So when you get in there, the parts are easy to lay down, and they sound dirty. They sound dirty like you play them on the road. It's not like you're just learning the parts in the studio. So I can't wait to get in there, and I can't wait to see the produced versions of my babies. I can't wait to see what comes out. And I know that Phil and Mike and Dean and Tyler, we're all really excited about that, you know, because the four of us put our heart and our souls into these songs, and they wouldn't be the same without any one of us. So it's really exciting for us right now.
Well, it sounds like you guys kind of went about it the right way, getting a bunch of songs together and then kind of really taking a break and sitting down and kind of sifting through. That's going to be tough to make final cuts when you got 20, 30 songs and be like, okay, we need, you know, 12 or 15 or whatever we want to put together. You know, it's going to be obviously tough elimination process.
I got to admit, it's a good problem to have. To be quite honest, going in to record the Welcome to My Head stuff, we didn't have a lot of material. And that was a really stressful time coming up with it kind of on the spot. And, I don't believe that we were ready at that time. And Jude Cole stepped in and really took the reins and quarterbacked that thing. And this time around, whenever we were going in to do this record, I had this severe anxiety and kind of paranoia that I didn't want to repeat that mistake going in and being like, oh yeah, well, I've got a lyric here, this cool lyric. It was like I brought to the table, to Mike and Phil, I mean, I had 30 ideas alone, and you know, Phil had 20 ideas, and Mike had 15 or 20 ideas, you know, and we all brought these, you know, because we did not want to to fly Mike out and have 3 weeks of coming up with stuff from scratch we wanted. So every single time we said, okay, what's next? We had six or seven ideas to pull up. Like, what do you want to, work with lyrics? You want to work with riffs? You want to work with, you know, okay, you want to work with the riff. So what do you got? He plays riff. Maybe not. We move on to the next one. As soon as somebody sticks with something, as soon as someone sticks with a melody, sticks to the riff, like, ooh, I really like that. I'm moved by that. That person quarterbacks it, and we follow. Everyone follows a leader. And I got to tell you, I'm going to be quite honest. This has been my most favorite time ever writing songs. And these songs are really personal. They're really personal. They're from the road. They're from heartbreaks on the road. They're from heartaches and rising up and victories and everything that you can possibly think of, good and bad. From a touring rock band on the road, that is where these songs are coming from, and that's a good word for them. Really personal. They're like really personal songs. There is one particular moment. Mike and Phil, we're at this beautiful lake house in Michigan, and we're up in Phil's room, and we're kind of wondering what we were gonna to work on. And I said, I've got this idea, and I played it for him on my phone, and Mike said, can you play it for me on the guitar? I want to hear you play it. I said, yeah, I'll play it for you. And, for some reason, it brought up the emotions that I had when I was writing the song. I started crying. I cried through the whole fucking song to my best friends. You know, I'm like blubbering through these songs. And I got done playing it, and I looked up, and Mike was like, that's what we're going to work on.
Right.
And it was like one of those moments that like I'll never forget, you know, because you don't think that the emotions don't always come up like that. They don't always like pull out of you. And it, you know, it was from a very personal experience, and it was from the lyrics were really personal and close, and maybe they were close to me that day. I don't know what happened. At the beginning of the session, I'm showing them a song. Hey, what do you guys think about this? And at the end of that, me sharing that with them, you know, like my soul is inside out and there's no hiding, you know, it was obvious. It's like, oh wow, this song means a lot to Mitch. That's really obvious, you know? So it was a really special time. You know, there's a lot of magic moments, as a songwriter that we all had. I think all of us were like, you know, a lot of goose flesh, a lot of goosebumps, a lot of like, ooh, hey, the hair on my arms are standing on end, and right. That's why we should work on this. And that's one of the most beautiful things about being a songwriter is that inspiration behind it. It's really, really beautiful.
Yeah, man, it sounds like you guys are getting gearing up for a big run. And I'll tell you what, the second song we have tonight is titled Welcome to My Head, which is the title of the EP. And this is the first song I ever heard from you guys. And the first time I heard it was, I was like, and I swear probably not even a couple hours later, I actually sent you guys an email to do a guest spot on the show. That's how much I dig this track. And this guitar riff, I'd assume Phil put this guitar riff together. And you mentioned gritty sound. This guitar riff on this track, man, is... wow. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's a really great riff, man. It's a really great tune. I'll tell you what, man. I don't know if you want to add any more to that, but if you want, we can just jam it out, man.
Let's jam that shit out.
Right on. This is Waylon. Welcome to My Head here on Revelator.
Shaman's pain in my mind.
Wayland here. Welcome to my head on Revelator. And I'm telling you what, if you are rocking out to that song after hearing it, you need to have your pulse checked. There's no doubt about that. Hanging out with Mitch from the band.
That's what's happening.
Well, hey, man, again, thanks for taking the time out tonight. I got to ask you, man, if you could play with any three bands, either currently playing or not even bands anymore, what three bands would you guys like to play live with, man?
You know, I would love to play, you know, I feel really fortunate because a lot of the bands that I'd love to play with, we've had the opportunity of playing with. Volbeat is one of the greatest shows I've ever seen. I've had the opportunity of playing with them twice this year. We'd love to tour with Blackstone Cherry. We'd love to play to tour with Shinedown. We would love to tour with Buck Cherry. I mean, there's just a lot of great music out right now. The Sick Puppies are incredible live. Foxy Shazam are like mind blowing. You know, 10 Years is incredible to watch. I'd love to tour with those guys. So I mean, there's we're really blessed in the world right now to all those rock and roll fans. There's so much good shit out there, and there's a lot of bands out there doing it, and it's cool to see.
Very cool, man. No, all those are really, really good live bands. Now, you guys obviously playing a lot of road. You know, we talked about, you know, playing live, new album, getting ready to record that this fall. Now, you also mentioned, you know, I always ask everybody, you know, their personal interests, you know, when you're not touring and recording and on the road doing all this stuff, man. I mean, you mentioned you were a movie buff before we went live tonight. What's the last movie you got a chance to see in theater, man?
Dude, I saw Man of Steel the other day. Holy fucking shit. It blew my nutsack right off my face.
You know, but I was on the fence, man. Everybody I hear that I've talked to that's seen Superman is like, dude, like it's so good, you have to go see it. And I was on the fence for so long about it, and I'm like, man, I was like, I might after the show, I might have to go see Superman, man. What other movies are you into, man? You into like the Marvel stuff and, you know, like Iron Man, all that stuff? You into those too, man?
Yeah. I'm more of a DC guy, but the Avengers is an incredible film. It's one of the best comic book movies I've ever seen in my life. Iron Man is great. Iron Man, the first one, is great. The second two weren't huge for me. You know, and Marvel tends to dance a little bit where I don't follow as much. Whereas DC, you know, like I'm really into the Christopher Nolan Batman. Obviously, I was really excited to see Christopher Nolan's take on Superman, and I love you know, Zack Snyder, who directed 300. I loved his take on that Superman, and to me, Superman has always moved me. There's a great quote from the first Superman which always follows me. I think about it all the time. And Marlon Brando says when he's putting his son Kal into the capsule, when he's sending him off to Earth, and his wife is asking him if this is the right thing to do. I don't know if we should send our son to Earth. And the people on Earth aren't like us. They're not as evolved as we are. He says something really profound to me that has followed me through all of the Superman movies. He says, they can be a great people if they want to be. They only lack the light to show the way. And he's talking about his son being that light and being the promise of the human potential, and that really fuels me. When I see a Superman movie, I look at that and I say, wow, I could do that. That's possible. That is actually possible. If we could somehow figure out how the molecules can be changed, if we can change our consciousness, if we can change the way that we live our lives, if we can change ourselves internally, there is a way that we could all be that powerful. Whether it be physically or not, I don't know if that will ever happen, but, you know, I just see a great possibility in the human race, and Superman to me is that incredible symbol. And, you know, Superman, and then, I mean, the way that they did the film in the 1% world, it was just so mind blowing, you know, but I love the Avengers. You know, I love Iron Man. I've got a real soft spot in my heart for Robert Downey Jr., and he is just an incredible actor and brings a lot of color. And then Mark Ruffalo as the Hulk was incredible. I still loved Edward Norton as the Hulk, and I relate a lot to the Hulk, you know, like busting out of control rage. It doesn't happen to me so much anymore, but there are holes in the walls all over the world, and they belong to my fist. So, you know, I can relate a little bit to that. But as far as other movies, you know, like I'm really into film altogether, and I think this last Oscar race was an incredible testament to where film is headed. I mean, you've got such a wide variety with Life of Pi, Django Unchained, which was an incredible film, Zero Dark Thirty, which was amazing, Silver Linings Playbook, which has my future wife in it, Jennifer Lawrence, who won the Oscar, and unbelievable. And then you've got films like Lincoln with, you know, Steven Spielberg putting out this biopic with one of the greatest performances of all time by Daniel Day-Lewis, Beasts of the Southern Wild, which had me crying all the way through it. You know, that little girl was absolutely incredible. Argo, I liked. I thought it was. I thought it was bullshit that it won Best Picture. I mean, it hailed America in such an incredible light, and America is a great country. But you know, you could definitely tell that they're like they're plugging that America is a great country, and we've done great things. Look at the great things that we did. Look at this: we broke people out of prison. We broke them out. Ben Affleck did it, and Ben Affleck is great. And
Good Will Hunting is also a great film.
What's that? What'd you say?
I said, and he's Good Will Hunting is awesome too. Yeah, no,
I thought there was better movies out there. You know, I thought Silver Linings. I thought fucking Les Mis was better. Lincoln,
Daniel Day-Lewis and Lincoln. I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis in just about any role he's in is really phenomenal. But his role in Lincoln that made that film. He was so good in that movie, man. But hey, man, we're coming up against it here, Mitch, and I could talk movies with you all night, bro.
You're cutting me off from talking movies.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry, man. If people are interested in your band Waylon, which I believe they're going to be, you guys got a lot of stuff coming up. I'm telling you, man. I know you guys are recording in September. Let's reconnect, man, when you got the album out and ready to roll, man. Why don't you guys stop back in, man?
Please, that would be amazing. And if I could just say something really quick, our fans are the very, very best fans on the face of this fucking planet, and they have supported us. They bought us a fucking bus. They bought us a bus, you guys. They bought us a bus, and we are only able to tour because of them. Our live show is only as exciting because these people come out. So just keep on supporting. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Go to the Facebook page, like the page, keep up with us, check the schedule. We're coming to a town near you, and we fucking love you.
Awesome. Well said, Mitch. It's been a pleasure chatting with you tonight, man. We close out tonight with one more track from you guys, another great tune, which is On My Knees. And, hey, man, appreciate you taking the time, and we close out tonight with On My Knees. Anything you want to add before we close out, man?
I can't wait to come to Nashville, give you guys handshakes and hugs, and sit down and do this live.
Awesome. Right on, bro. Hey, Waylon, great band. Mitch, good dude. Pleasure talking with you. We'll be in touch, my friend.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Times I've been here on the edge of this knife. There's a hole in the ground. A man, he waits for me and doesn't make a sound. I'm in the middle of the road, in the calm before the storm.
Revelator. That is Waylon with On My Knees. And thanks to Mitch for stopping in tonight. Great interview. Great guy. Hopefully everybody enjoyed the show. And we'll talk a little NBA before we close out tonight. The NBA Finals just finished. And as most people know, I grew up in Northeast Ohio as a Cleveland sports fan. So it's a little tough for me to see LeBron win another title. But he does so. He's the best player in the world. Kudos to him. He played great in that final game. And the Spurs, man, they got to be kicking themselves. The trophy's in the building with 28 seconds to go in game 6 last Tuesday night, and they let that thing slip away. A bounce here, a foul shot there, and it may be a different story. But Spurs lost game 6, and I thought that if they didn't win game 6, they probably weren't going to win the series, and that's pretty much how it turned out. The Miami Heat closed it out this past Thursday night in game 7, the NBA Finals. The NBA Draft is coming up this week as well, and I've talked about this quite a bit on the show in the last month or so. If I'm a general manager in the NBA, I'm trying to get the hell away from this NBA Draft. There's just no one in this draft that's like, yep, I'm going to, you know, especially if you're in the top 10. There's no one in that draft you go, yep, this is a guy that's going to be a superstar in this league that's going to help our team. There's nobody there. I mean, there's a lot of question marks. And you have the Cavs and some of these other teams in the top 2, 3, 4 picks. The only two guys I would take a look at are Otto Porter from Georgetown and Victor Oladipo from Indiana. The rest of them are huge question marks, and they're basically just guys. They're just guys in the NBA. Will they be decent players? I don't know, maybe. But those two are the only two that I think that you know what you're going to get when you draft those two. Remains to be seen what's going to happen this week. So we'll keep abreast of the NBA draft and see how it goes. Like I said, if I'm a GM in the NBA, I'm sweating bullets because my job is on the line here on Thursday night as far as who I'm going to pick and trade and do whatever. So maybe try to get the hell off that pick if I'm a GM in the NBA, which I'm not. So who knows? But that's the way I see that NBA draft. But hopefully the finals were great. Also, congratulations to the Chicago Blackhawks winning the Stanley Cup in the NHL as well. Kudos to them. Great season. Hey, hope everyone had a great show tonight. The band Waylon, kick-ass. Mitch, really cool dude. And we'll be back next week with another kick-ass band like always. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy their finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.
This was Episode 16, Astropiece Theater. For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.